Hello and welcome to the Scottcast. This is the Giant Bomb Guild Wars 2 Community's off-topic podcast. I'm your host, Self-Professed Cynic, and joining me today is only Doubleton.
The one and only.
Exactly. It's great. Like, we weren't going to do an episode this week. Like, the stars did not align. It got to the point where friends came over to my place, Shinboys has homework, you had work, you've been tired, you were doing Christmassy stuff.
It's this weird, you know, aligning of the stars of just, in real world, it's getting crunch time, or it's, you know, it's the season is upon us. And then in games time, kind of like, there's not a lot play-wise happening. We'll talk about a lot of announcements happening.
Yeah. Like, straight up, like, we weren't going to do it. And then I saw the VGX yesterday, and I was like, well, you need to fucking talk about what the fuck that was. Oh, God. But beyond that, there's actually some really crazy news that Thurbleton is apparently oblivious to, so it'll be fun to pop the news on that. Well, he may not know about it already. Whatever. And we've been playing a couple of games. Because we've been playing so few, we may as well just get them out of the way. Like, I played Flower on PS4.
And
I finished it. It was really short. I was expecting it to be a bit longer. It's only about, what would it be, like, maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours long. Have you seen Flower before, or have you seen the coverage about it?
I know it's by the same guys who did
Journey.
Journey, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know too much.
It was an interesting stepping stone because they started with Flow, which is this game where it's like a evolution simulator where you start as a microbe and you slowly grow, right?
But it's not like Spore, but just on the basic level, right?
Yeah. It's like the gameplay loop of Spore. It's not the multiplayer part of Spore, but the gameplay part of Spore. There's no end goal to it. It was just grow. You just eat stuff or get eaten and slowly advance as a life form. Flower was an interesting step away from that because there's an actual gameplay loop and story to it. It's not a very, like, overbearing story. They don't, like, straight up, like, there's no, like, voiceover or there's no narration or words even. I don't think there's a single story-related piece of text in that game. It's just visuals and music that tells the story. But the gameplay is, like, they abstract it. Like, they say you play as the wind and the idea is to bring color and life to the world by spreading flower petals, or ostensibly their seeds, to the other flowers. But in reality, if you actually look at how the game works, you are a large flower snake, and the idea is to hit all the flowers with your motion-controlled movement. That's essentially it. You're a flower snake in that game. Wind slash flower snake. And so it controls weirdly, because it's only with the gyro in the motion in the DualShock 4, and so it takes a while to get used to it. Because, like, the idea is you hold any button and that makes the wind or flower snake go forward. But if you use the triggers, which is what I did, it actually accepts full analog acceleration, right? So you can do really slow, really exact movement, but also really fast movement if you just use the triggers and feather them. So it works out such that it's kind of like fighting the controls sometimes, but a lot of times it is just this naturalistic kind of moving your arms with the movement of the game and flowing with the music and watching color being spread through the screen. And it is a PS3 game that's been up-res to PS4, so it is absolutely fucking stunning looking. It's just beautiful game. There's like night levels where you're interacting with these like glow in the dark plants, and as you flow through them, they start lighting up around you, and it's just even though it's just an up-res game, it is probably my favorite looking game on the PS4, and actually probably my favorite game on the PS4 at the moment, including Assassin's Creed. Not to say Assassin's Creed's bad, it's just that Flower was really surprisingly really nice. I didn't think I'd like it that much, but it's very good. I don't think I'd put it on this year's Games of the Year list because it is just an up-res. But it would be up there if it wasn't. So that's my PS4 tour. I played a bit more Assassin's Creed. I finally got my ship. That is awesome. But we talked about it last week, so we'll move on. Doubleton, what have you been
You
up
got
to?
The jackboot.
The jackdaw. The jackdaw, yo. Yeah, I can't. I hope that ship gets bigger, though, because I feel like I see a galleon in the distance, and I'm like, I fuck that, and I freaking sail the other direction. I hope it gets to the point where I can take on, like, big ships. It's going to be interesting. Yeah, what have you been up to, Thoubleton? What's up?
Just relaxing with, because of the holidays, I've really bought any new games, because mm-hmm. I need to save up for buying stuff for my family and then paying for shipping it.
Right.
But, like, I've just been... delving a bit into Minecraft again to just like make some bridges, since the server I'm playing on is like a, you know, the basic design of that game, right? With like the way the worlds are constructed.
Kinda, yeah. So it's all like, it's a word that's going to be coming up much this week, but procedurally generated.
Yes, but then like the common idea of the world is that like, okay, there's sometimes a desert biome or a plains biome or like, you know, stuff like that. That different biome. Imagine someone just like it. Turn that scale up to 11, not in time, like size of generation, but in verticality.
Yeah.
And so it's like you're walking in the Hall of the Giants sort of thing of just like these massive spires that are walking around and in no way resembling a real world, but it allows me to make bridges, which is just like one of the boring things I can do while listening to podcasts.
All right. Sure.
And then just playing like, you know, Splunky. I think I'm done with. I'm nearing the end of my time with Payday 2 because it's just like it's not being real interesting, I guess. Like I'm starting to reach the cap of all that it's providing, and I can't find a lot of other games to play.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier. Like it's gotten to the end of the year now. Some people saying it's like it's been one of the most disappointing end of years for a long time. I wouldn't go that far.
I just think it's kind of interesting that two consoles have just come out and there's nothing good to play.
Yeah, well there's nothing that immediately screams, you need to play this now on anything.
Yeah, I mean, like, Battlefield is cool and all, but I don't really want to get into it when everything's breaking. And then by the time they have it all fixed, like, there's going to be two to three DLCs out that I don't really want to pay an extra $20 for. Assassin's Creed looks kind of cool, but I got burned the last two Assassin's Creeds.
Right, yeah. It's been good seeing, like, Patrick just posted this on Twitter. Like he didn't enjoy 3 much, but he finds 4 really fun. I'd say I'd mimic that that feeling, but at the same time, it isn't a game you need to play now. Like, it's perfectly valid to just wait till that game hits $20 or $10 on Steam and pick it up then. There's no real...
I mean, like, that's it. Like, is it on Steam right now?
It's $70, at least in Australian Steam, it's $70. I don't know how much it is over there.
But then also, like, I'm just going to have to boot it up in Steam and then play it in Uplay, which I understand why they're doing it. It's just, like, annoying having to open up through two different browsers to play a game.
I didn't know that you had to do that on PC, because I've never played an Assassin's Creed game on PC. So
I'm pretty sure you had to do that for 3. I can't imagine why they would backtrack it on 4.
Aside from it being a terrible, terrible way to play games.
It is a terrible way to play games, but it's a way to ensure that they get their Uplay marketing out there.
Yeah, and it's still Ubisoft, so they're not going to change. It's working too well. As long as they keep making good games, people are going to still fucking live with that Uplay bullshit. But yeah, no, you're right. Like, there's not... Like, for me, the only game out there which everyone says I need to play that I haven't looked at yet is Zelda, A Link Between Two Worlds. A Link Between Worlds or whatever. Everyone says it's really good, but it's a fucking Nintendo game, and I don't like...
And Duran's not here to tell you how much fun it is.
Yeah, and exactly. He's not here to make me say nice things about Nintendo. Like, I respect Nintendo a great deal, but I have
Go
ahead.
He was on... Like I was going to have him come on to talk about Starbound, but he is busy setting up the Christmas tree. So again, like, it's the holidays.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like I respect Nintendo a lot, but I've made no allusions to me liking their games except for maybe Pokemon. But I feel like I need, since Game of the Year stuff is probably going to come up on our end pretty soon, whether it be next week or within the next 3 weeks, it has to be within the next 3 weeks. I feel like I'm the guy who needs to at least play that, because I have the money to buy it. And no one else here is going to play it. So it might be me who ends up picking that up. And I've never played a Zelda game to completion, so maybe that would be a good one to start with. I don't know. But anyway, that is what we've been not playing this week. Because we can go on about what we haven't been doing. But what else has happened this week, Doubleton? What, there's something you Americans have over there. Like some video game awards?
I don't want to say that is entirely America's doing.
I would argue otherwise.
But yes, there is an award show called the VGX. That was previously the Video Game Awards.
Uh-huh, the VGAs.
The VGAs. But instead they decided to televise it. Or not, no, it's webisized right now.
Uh-huh. But don't you know, Doubleton, it's the next generation of Video Game Awards.
Good night, folks.
By the way, I think we're both sick. I'm sick. I'm definitely sick. I don't know if you're still
sick. I'm recovered from being sick, as some folks might have noticed from last week's double show.
Yeah.
I was sick.
If I just break out into coughs or sneezes, I apologize in advance. But no, the idea is before the VGAs, which are hosted by Spike and Game Trailers, were televised on the outset, and thus they were about 1.5 to 2 hours long, and they had a bunch of shit that gamers didn't like in them. This is their version of why they made a change, right? So what they're doing this year, what they did this year, was it's a 3-hour show that is webcast. Then they put a cut down version on that show on TV. So ostensibly, they could have more of the show dedicated to gameplay and game reveals and less of the show by percentage on music acts and other bullshit that we don't care about. So they're trying to please both audiences with it. How would you say they succeeded on that?
I think they entertained gamers. I think they entertained the internet with some of the really dumb stuff that happened.
Oh gosh, it was
just give me an example. The two big, I guess, tropes that were happening what I saw. I didn't start from I didn't join at the very beginning of it.
Yeah, how much did you end up watching, by the way, before we go into too much depth? But how much did you end up seeing off the VGX?
I want to say I joined at the Titanfall. No, it was before Titanfall. I don't know.
Okay. Near the end ish, like the middle to the end.
I'd say about like an hour of it. I didn't see all 3 hours, but I saw Starbound or not, mm-hmm. not Starbound.
The No Man's Sky.
Yeah. No Man's Sky. That's the one.
Yeah. Yep. Which we'll talk about.
But I saw a fair number of really bad, comments by Joel McHale.
Uh-huh, yep, that's accurate.
Which apparently was throughout the night. And then I saw bad conversations and dumb stuff happening outside in the Grand Theft Auto Keeping It Real crowd.
Oh, God.
And some guy talking about potatoes.
Oh, my God. Who are those people? Do you know who those people are? Are those famous people?
I'm assuming they're musicians and or artists of some kind that helped with Grand Theft Auto. They're real street thugs, yo.
So what are you saying about tropes you've observed during the night?
Just Joel McHale constantly saying stuff.
Like, so the show...
Let's start with that.
So I logged on to Mumble, the Guild Wars 2 Mumble for the Linkin Force, about half an hour before the show came on. At the time I showed up, no one knew... except for myself, or no one remembered that the VGAs was on tonight. I actually had been looking forward to it because I had bought into their bullshit about being good, and hoping, and this is the first one that was webcast, so that people don't know, Australia doesn't get Spike TV to my knowledge, so this is the first VGAs I could watch live. So I was excited. I got on and told, it was Revan and Loopy Monkey and a couple other dudes out there, and I was like, yeah, let's watch the VGAs. And so we all sat down together on Mumble to watch the VGAs. And so they announced Joel McHale was going to be the co-host like last week or so. And I think, I'm not sure if even Joel McHale knew he was going to host this thing till last week or so. Because
it was more like, does Joel McHale know a lot about video games?
Does he know a lot about the show? Does he know a lot about the audience he's speaking to?
Does he know that the VGAs are a show about video games?
Within seconds of its opening, where Jeff Keighley... So it opened with just Joel McHale speaking. He was talking to the camera, very obviously reading from the teleprompter, with Jeff Keighley standing next to him, just kind of reacting to what he was saying. Not saying a word, but just like laughing here and there and looking into the camera and looking to the, like, I guess would be a studio audience of developers, etc., who are hanging out in the pub or whatever they're having it in, this like upmarket kind of bar area.
It was like a loft of some sort from what I was watching.
Yeah. And so like he'd just be looking to the crowd and kind of reacting with them to Joel McHale. But it became obvious that A, he was reading almost entirely off the prompter for the first part of that show, and B, they hadn't really discussed beforehand how much hosting he would be doing and how much hosting Jeff would be doing. Because
was there a power play or something?
It was a very interesting development as the show progressed as to Joel McHale not doing a very good job of being a host, and Jeff Keighley slowly wresting control from him over the first couple of segments. It was, yes, there were power plays. It was very interesting. It all climaxed at the Nintendo segment. I assume you didn't watch that because that would have been before.
No, I was there for, like, you mean Reggie. Talking,
yeah, Reggie. Right? Were you there for that?
Yeah, I was there for that.
Okay, yeah. So you probably noticed that Joel McHale started like that kind of segment when Jeff would kind of cut in over him every now and then. And then it got to the point where Jeff was just throwing hard line questions to Reggie, and Joel McHale was trying to ease off the tension by like cracking some wise. And it got to the point where Joel McHale just left halfway through that segment. I'm not sure if you noticed.
I didn't actually see Joel McHale leave, but yeah, okay.
It cut to the screen, cut back, he was gone.
I thought he was going to like another position for
shoot or something. But that would have made sense if he'd done that just before it ended, but it was like 5 minutes to go, so it was just Jeff sitting there, or standing there, like, discussing things with Reggie. So it built to that point. So there's, like, them kind of playing off each other, but not very well, but also them both, because Joel McHale would be trying to be funny. I'm specifically saying trying.
Emphasis on try, yeah.
Trying to be funny. Well, and Jeff... Go ahead.
Yeah. He would play jokes that would be like, you know, of what you would expect from Joel McHale. Like, you know, it's kind of crossing a line, kind of, you know, snarky, funny. It's, you know, he almost like he's an embittered person, which I mean, like, I'm not saying that Joel McHale is an embittered person. It's just that is like that's the bit he tends to play.
Are you familiar with much of his work? Because I've only seen like a couple episodes of Community, and that's pretty much my entire experience of Joel McHale. Like, what do you know about him as an actor?
Pretty much just Community.
Okay,
I know he's done some stand up, but I'm not familiar with it.
Right, and was that the Joel McHale you were used to, or did it seem like he wasn't? Because it seemed to me like he wasn't really there to a large extent. Like he was clearly disinterested in the entire affair. Like,
I think he was just there for the paycheck.
There was like an element of deadness to his eyes throughout the entire thing, at least that I perceived, which was very indicative of his overall effort as to like halfway through the show where he'd be directly referencing reading from the teleprompter whilst also saying how much he drunk during the show. And it was a wonderful train wreck, in my opinion, especially with that Nintendo segment and how like Nintendo had hyped up that they were going to show some... And this isn't just me trying to harp on Nintendo. I'm not trying to kick them while they're down or anything. But if you look at the fans, etc., their reactions to it, you'd see that people were expecting a little bit more than a new character announcement for Donkey Kong. And so when he got there and up there and showed that... when
okay,
Jeff
I just
said,
I want to ask you something, Cynic.
Go ahead.
Did that look a lot like DuckTales?
I don't know.
There's a floor of spikes, and the old man is using a stick to bounce off them.
My only real question is it intentionally ripping off DuckTales, or are Nintendo trying to play this off as if they came up with the idea? Because, yeah, it's an old gentleman with a beard and a pogo stick, or a walking stick, which happens to also be a pogo stick bouncing on spikes. Like, that is clearly DuckTales. In the entire org, the chat, etc., was just like, this is obviously DuckTales. In fact, Jeff Gerstmann was actually in the Giant Bomb chat while the show was going on, and he was commenting as the show went. And yeah, it was just like, oh, so Nintendo's invented pogo sticks now? Is that what just happened? Or I think Marino was like, oh, successor to DuckTales confirmed to be Donkey Kong Country. Like, it was very interesting that A, all they had to show was a new character for a game that's already been announced, and B, they kind of played it up to some extent, and it was this like semi-derivative piece of gameplay. So when Jeff got up there and said, okay, so I guess a lot of fans would be pretty disappointed. Like, he literally just said it to Reddy. A lot of fans would be pretty disappointed what they've seen today. How about you show more of your game? And then they cut back to the game for another, like, an unintended, clearly off-script 5 minutes of more gameplay with Donkey Kong, whilst Jeff started, like, hammering into Reggie about, like, where is the new Metroid and like, other... Are you actually going to be in Smash Brothers? Like, how is that voltage going? And so on. It was a very interesting segment. What do you think of it?
As not a hardcore Nintendo fan, I was like more or less impartial with it. But
yep.
Yeah, it did seem like a little bit weird.
And that's kind of what it was. Like, it was the whole show had kind of built up to that, with it kind of getting weirder and weirder. Like, for example, the chick who played... Were you there for when the chick who plays Tomb Raider was on stage?
Yeah, that was super weird.
Can you describe what happened?
Okay, well, first off, they had her ad-lib something, or, like, make some announcement, which she was not prepared or, like, informed prior that she would be doing that.
And yep.
I sort of chuckled as it was, like, okay, here's this... You know, video game actress or actor, I think it's PC to say actor now, I'm behind the times, but she's using her normal, just like, well, I guess her talking on a show, talk show kind of voice,
yep,
and then switch to her announcer voice. And it's just like, it was funny.
And beyond there, when Joel McHale was like, oh, like the reaction for her when he'd revealed that they wanted her to say stuff was like, oh. She looks at the camera. Oh. And you'd never, that's literally how she acted. You'd never seen that on screen before. Like, there was moments in the VGX which were absolutely wonderfully cringeworthy. It was exciting to watch such a, I've never seen something so off the rails before on what is ostensibly live television, even though it's going to be cut down.
That's the other thing. Like, you could tell a lot of it was prepared as if it were going to eventually be on television.
Yeah.
And that comes with a lot of, like, I don't want to say of, like, I'm trying to find the right words for it and I'm coming up at a loss. But it as if it was something that was not genuinely designed to be for the internet community, but something that was eventually going to be on TV. So, like, they said they're going to make it better by being just on the internet first.
Mm-hmm.
But it still just felt like 3 hours of TV instead of, like, of potential TV.
Exactly, yeah. And it's very telling that I was kind of very interested in seeing how the awards would play out. Because this is, for those who don't know, like, the VGX or the VGAs, most of it are voted on a panel, like, with a panel of judges. Like, Jeff Gerstmann is one of the panelists. It's not a small panel, it's like a large group of people from various parts of the industry, overseas, etc., just generally games journalists who vote on the categories, right? So in a lot of cases, their picks are really good. Like, the I believe the Walking Dead won the VGA's the Game of the Year for its year, etc. So I was actually legitimately interested in seeing how the larger journalistic community would vote on things like Game of the Year. And it was very telling that for the VGX, it was about 45 minutes before even the first game award was shown. And they had interesting things, like you had to tweet at them to, inverted commas, vote on which award would be presented next. Or there was, like, large segments of them just you know, like showing off what is essentially ads for games, like just like world exclusive new trailer for this previously announced game. Like there was like large segments of them building to that, there being like a minute long trailer, and then just like them reacting to that. That was the extent of the show. And like what I have noticed to be American TV, it is just a lot of people, like their hosts talking amongst themselves and kind of just filling time for a lot of it. And it didn't feel like 3 hours packed with content I wanted. In fact, it felt like, go ahead.
It almost felt like it's the Giant Bomb guys could have done, but like if they had,
yes, they could have.
I'm trying to think because someone suggested a good host for it, and it was like
Elijah Wood.
Whoever is in charge. No. But ironically enough, the Elijah Wood who is contracted under to do voice work for Double Fine's CEO. What's his name?
Tim Schafer.
Tim Schafer. Yeah, Tim Schafer would make an awesome host.
He'd be fantastic. He's funny, and he was one of the few people of the night who talked to Joel McHale and made Joel McHale look as if he was comfortable on stage. Like, he has this, like, this force of personality about him, and he's just, like, intrinsically a funny guy and disarming with his, like, just his humbleness to a large extent. He's just a really down-to-earth kind of dude. I would love to see him host it. And that was another factor throughout the entire night. Like, legitimately, any part with actual developers on stage or videos made by developers was really good to watch. Like, my favorite thing of the whole night was Bioshock Infinite winning best shooter. Like, let's not actually go. Do you want to go into who won? Because I don't think any of the awards were particularly interesting as to the winners.
Not really.
Okay, let's just not even go into it because like, it didn't even make sense. So there's things like Brothers of Tale of Two Sons winning best Xbox game against Bioshock Infinite and Grand Theft Auto V. Even though Grand Theft Auto V wins Game of the Year, it's just,
what has been interesting is I don't really like the top 10 games anymore since like especially after last year doing like the whole discussion from our end. It's really just what you think that your favorite top 10 games of the year were.
Yeah.
If there's some like Steam sale associated with the top 10 games or something, that might be an interesting approach. But when it comes to just like these awards, I enjoy like the Giant Bomb silly awards, like the best game with Nolan North as a voice actor sort of thing.
Yeah, the Northies and yeah. I mean, it's more meaningful to me. Like, there is obviously some meaning to a outlet such as Giant Bomb or your game spots or your game trailers, etc.
Well, no, like the one I think is a good example of a good award show is something like the IGF.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Which is, well, those are cool because it's developers, but them and the one at Games. GDC Game Developers Conference. Those two award shows are very interesting because it's people who make games voting on them, and they generally come up with some very interesting picks for the winners. In fact, in many cases, ones that I could legitimately say, yeah, sure, they deserve to win. There's definitely room out there for awards which matter in the gaming industry. Like I like Giant Bomb's top 10, mainly for the discussions they have rather than the actual list itself, because no one has the same top 10.
It's the discussion more than the list. And when they just go straight to the list of saying like, oh, here's the three nominees and here's the winner, that doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah, and it's literally only for at some point it just becomes about self-justification or just like reaffirming your own opinions. And that's why a lot of people like award shows is because they have a backer, and if their backer wins, they feel like self-affirmed. And so that's why you'll find the same for sports, like that you want your team to win, obviously. So there's that element of it. But in this case, I don't think the awards really mattered because it didn't really make sense. But when Bioshock Infinite won Best Shooter, and the video that the developers made for it was they set up a conference room. And they'd invite a random developer from their team into the room and present them the award and say, okay, just impromptu, you have to make an acceptance speech for the company as a whole for this award, like best tutor of the year. And you got really wonderful, genuine reactions from it was like 50 or 100, like 80 devs, like just a bunch of people.
It was funny because it's like, what? Why me? This like, why this reward? I don't really care.
Or just like, I don't know. I don't want to speak for the whole company. And it was really adorable because it was them. It was the actual developers themselves. And he saw that the legitimate human reactions to something that would be like surprising to anybody, right? But it's also like they're really happy because they won an award at the same time. And so just seeing, and it just cuts from dev to dev to dev to dev to dev over all of them going, I don't know if I feel comfortable. It just, and at the end, it just had a little, the award like there with a like sticky, like a post-it note going, we're bad at this, but thank you on the award. And it was just a really genuine, wonderful little stint, which let me connect with the developers. And that like theme of the developer made videos being really cool definitely popped up a couple times during the night. Like, for example, the acceptance speech from Naughty Dog was really cool because it was just the two, the co-founders of Naughty Dog walking down a long hallway with all their like magazine covers on the each side of the hallway, which made it look like really like a grandiose and as if they didn't really care about the awards. But and they were talking, holding the award and talking about the award, etc. And then they walk around a corner and the camera pans aside, and then you have the whole Naughty Dog team there, and they're all just like happy and cheering, and that was really cool. And then they had the stupid thing with Joel doing the Antonio Banderas thing with like in hand keyed and animated 1-to-1 with the Antonio Banderas GIF and meme, and him going inside. It was dumb because I hate that meme. But it was cute at the same time because it was literally like pretty much a direct letter from the developers to the gaming community. And what's his face? That's the other one with Elijah Wood being announced for Broken Age, and the behind the scenes video there with him just coming in and talking to the developer and the developer. And all this like behind the scenes stuff with just people just being genuine and talking to each other about games.
I have to ask, did you see, because a couple days ago they posted. Double Fine posted like a video about other voice actors mm-hmm. in the game.
Yeah.
And it was like more of a part two, but I could never find a part one. And part one was in fact Elijah Wood.
Yeah.
But did you end up watching it?
No, I haven't watched it yet. I haven't watched
There's a funny bit where Will Wheaton is like shows up and asks like, oh, who's the voice of, I think, Shay? Basically mm-hmm. who's Elijah Wood's character? Like who's doing the voice?
Yeah.
And then she's like, we're announcing it December 7th. We can't actually tell you. And Whedon's just like, really? Really?
Yeah. But it's... But Elijah's really cool. Like,
yeah.
It reminded me of how... Like, I know he was at the stupid Xbox 360 launch event on the MTV thing, like 9 years ago, whatever it was, and that was really dumb. But he's a really cool guy, and he really likes video games. And there's like just... there's a section of the video which is him sitting there playing Broken Age and just loving it. And I know
anybody
who
brings Rice Krispie treats to work probably is going to be okay.
Exactly. And so it was moments like that, moments like the Naughty Dog section speech and the those guys and a couple of the others, which made me
see... I just have to ask because I'm a horrible person, but what did you think of the Gone Home announcement? Like the winning thing?
That was wonderful too! I love that! It was fantastic. Did you not like it? I loved it. It was
I enjoyed it, but I had to laugh because I was on the Giant Bomb PC Gaming Hub Bumble.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, geez, another game developer in Portland with an indie game. And I just like, guys, it's not going at all like smoothly at all, but I have to remind you that I am a person who's living in Portland trying to make a video game. They're like, shut up, Thurb.
But it was really wonderful. It's just like them. It was a classic thing, which was like the I forget what they call it. It's the snorri cam shot, which is just a over the shoulder fixed position to a person camera with the award in front of it, and you just see the award walking through Portland, and you see it like looking at people and then waving at it and all that kind of stupid shit. Then they go into a arcade, and they see the two of the development team are there at the arcade playing an arcade game.
I've been to that arcade.
That's cool. And then it's just really turn nice around and accept the award. And that's fucking wonderful. It was a wonderful little video. What did you have to say about it?
It's a nice arcade. You can get a beer and have play arcade games or pinball.
Which arcade? Do you want to plug it?
It's called Ground Control, spelled with a K.
Nice. Cool. And yeah, so it's like, it was like a short little indie short, which is very reminiscent of indie movies and stuff, especially with that Snorri cam. Not many people use that anymore. It's outside of indie, and maybe people like the dude who made Requiem for a Dream and The Fountain. I forget his name. So it was just like, it was glimpses like that into those acceptance speeches. And if I could imagine a video games award where the awards actually mattered, and the only real parts aside from that would be those acceptance speeches, like those little shorts, essentially, because they're essentially little shorts, right? Imagine a show which was that. Imagine a show which is people who cared about games making little videos that are funny and entertaining about them accepting the awards, but then you have the awards itself, and you have people on stage doing game demos. That would be an amazing award show. And so there's glimpses of that, but
that would never fly on TV, so Spike TV isn't going to do that.
Yeah, no, they're not going to do it. And so it was a very interesting experience. Like, it was a show. I'm happy I watched the GDAs. Sorry, the VGAs.
Mainly VGX. Because
the VGX, yeah.
Next gen!
Oh, God. Mainly because I love watching that train wreck, especially because the last 20 minutes was some, like, Grand Theft Auto 5 music with those dudes, and it was just, like, the most insufferable people in the world speaking, like, clearly reading off a teleprompter, because, like, one of the dudes would be, like, leaning forward, looking next to the camera, clearly reading teleprompter. Like, it was,
and
like,
then the guy in the back just kept saying potatoes.
Potatoes! I don't know why, I assume there's some context that we missed. And so, yeah, there was just, so much of it was so fucking bad. And Joel McHale, like, what's his face? Boogie2988, Francis from YouTube fame, who I really like. I actually really legitimately enjoy his content.
Yeah, like, the fact that he does that voice as a bit is kind of annoying, but
yeah, like, but he like, his perspectives, like, his actual videos, when he plays himself, Boogie, are usually really, really kind of good and insightful. So he has obviously raised some objections to, like, jokes made about gamers, and it's kind of the thing that's brought up pretty much every time the VGAs happen. Like, literally every time the VGAs happen, people come up out of the woodwork and say, "Hey guys, gamers aren't kids in their, like, basements playing video games till, like, 1 a.m. in the morning and with their moms upstairs telling them to go to sleep anymore. We're kind of the people across all ages of all walks of life, and we're grown-ups now for the large extent, and we don't want to be talked to that way," like, especially with some of the jokes Joel was cracking. And I do agree with him to some extent. I don't think it is realistic. Like you said, this is for Spike TV and with that audience in mind. So I don't think it was particularly realistic to come at this wanting that. But at the same time, having seen those glimpses of what the world could be like, I'm definitely with him in saying that this continues to not be the award show I hope for out of the industry. How about you? What's your general thoughts of this? Do you think there's space for a good award show out there? Like, the answer is probably yes, but do you think it will happen?
I think it might happen, but yes, there's potential for it. Yes, it could happen, but it's not going to be something we'll see on TV. It's not like,
yeah,
like, to an extent, like, the IGF and whatnot sort of is that, but that is done for the developer side of it and for the indies, like the people making the games. And do we want them to possibly, like, ruin that, like, the joy of doing that just so it's more televised and, like, for our audience?
Yeah, exactly. And, like 50,000 people watching this live on Twitch, right? And so you wouldn't get that number of people if there wasn't the ad side of the show, because, like, we're going to get there now, essentially. We'll cut straight to it. But half the VGX was game demos and game announcements, right? And so that is, like, an element of marketing, which is drilled into the core of what VGX is. As I said, it was 45 minutes before we even had the first award shown. That kind of would ruin something like the indie game, like the indie developers awards and the game GDC developer awards, right? It would ruin that if you brought that element of marketing to it and money into it, which is kind of sad because that money and marketing is also what gives it its clout. it's kind of like it's a catch 22 because that's what makes people watch it, which gives it its importance. And that's why you have more and more announcements there. But at the same time, because of that, it has to be more mainstream. So you're going to have your musical performances, etc. So it's kind of this self-defeating, circulating prophecy that I don't know if there'll ever be like a space for, or at least the possibility of a good award show out there, because this already exists, right? And
I think this is a good transition to the next topic, which is like, well, it's sort of announcements. It's that the biggest game that everyone seems to be talking about that came out of the VGX is an indie game,
which is really cool.
One thing I want to point out, it's Jeff Keighley was super excited about announcing it.
Yeah.
And to me, Jeff Keighley seems like the most mainstream, like front end Spike TV kind of guy, even if he has the best intentions, like behind the veil of like, I just want to do this for indie game or for like for video games. It's like, well, you are still like the spokesperson of AAA, I guess.
Yeah.
And he's announcing this, what was it, Star?
Really ambitious indie game by the Joe Danger developers of all fucking things called No Man's Sky, which I
That's what it is.
So I absolutely love that name. It's a beautiful name. It references No Man's Land, which is like a place that's undiscovered or a place no one goes to. But No Man's Sky is
really. Like, I associate No Man's Land with, like, World War One, sort of like it's the area you don't want to go in between the trenches.
It's been used in multiple contexts, and that's definitely
It's been, like, severely discovered by people who are later dead.
Okay. Yeah, and in that case, it's just, like, used in referencing a dead zone or places you go, really dangerous, and places that you don't want to go, because it's like essentially a killing field, right? Is No Man's Land.
But, yeah. Anyway, neither of those. Let's talk about the game.
Well, do you think it's a good name? Because you couldn't remember it, and that's a problem.
I think I'll start remembering. Like I don't think it's that big of a problem because I know it as the procedurally generated game that I'd like to see more about because I'm not sure how expansive those worlds are when they get generated and. But yeah, it looks super cool. I just don't know the name, but I know it's made by Hello. I know the developer of it, which is Hello Games, which Hello is very Games. Iconic names.
And they went from like, what was it? You telling me beforehand about how they blew up.
I'm not sure how many they had before, but now when I checked this morning, I got like a notification that like Brad Shoemaker, Evan Lottie, and Patrick Klepek, and all these people are now following Hello Games. I look at them. They're at over 22K followers.
Yeah, I think they were like 1 or 2K before this, and they're now at 22K followers on Twitter.
Like their mail server broke.
Well, it's really interesting. Like, so what No Man's Sky is it's a game where everything is procedurally generated. So it starts off like their like catchphrase for it is it starts off with every atom is procedural, and then the word atom changes to like plant, animal, like
tree,
planet,
all that.
A tree, and then it goes to planet, and then it goes galaxy, and then it goes every planet is undiscovered, and then it opens into this really interesting kind of green sea with all this like wildlife, kind of crawling or swimming through it. And you're in this first person's perspective, or you don't really know that at the time, but it turns out you are.
Yeah,
you look like it just seems like just
you
a
go from out of cockpit to in cockpit.
Yeah, and like you see, like, walks out of the sea onto the land, and he looks out, and it's like tree and then forest stuff. And he turns to his right, and you see that the spaceship in the distance. And he walks up to the spaceship, and then the top pulls away, and you step into the cockpit, and then you take off. And you point the spaceship upwards and you just keep going. And now you're in space. And then you see like all these other spaceships in space flying away. And so like the general idea of it is it's procedurally generated worlds. It's like your Minecrafts or Terrarias, etc. So there's going to be an inordinate number of procedurally generated worlds, and it's all about, at least for what I can tell, discovery of that, but also space sim, space combat, that kind of stuff as well. Like,
I want to point out that the space side of it remind me a lot of like the homeworld feel, sort of like it's almost slow, poetic movements, but then they also have that like nice streak to the engine trail.
Yeah,
and, like that looks really cool.
Yeah,
and like, is it going to an exploration game or is it a like? I don't know what to expect from it.
There's a lot of questions out there. Like, what were your general reactions to it? Like, when you saw the trailer?
Okay, the reaction will be a bit more long-winded, but it...
Go ahead. We have plenty of time.
Oh, yes, definitely, because I work in the morning, but...
Yeah, totally.
It looked cool. Like, the art style looked really impressive. I was drawn in by that, and to one side, we can expect, like, as the next gen sort of things happening, as development of like technology increases, we can begin to see some like sort of like Minecraft but high res and multiple planets and like just vastly open world. And that's like, wow, is this actually that type of game? Like, how big? Like, can you see the curvature of a planet, sort of thing, or like what's the depth of procedural generation from planet to planet? And surprised that it was coming from an indie studio and that Jeff Keighley was talking about it, which makes me think that, okay, maybe they have some sort of backer, like, you know, some EA's backing them or something, but that'll play out in time. I don't know about that.
And you kind of hit on what I felt, because people don't know who I'm following the VGX at the time, which I don't fucking blame you, because I was a fucking shit show. The entire time, Brad and Patrick and the rest of the guys on Twitter were going on about, you remember from last week's Unprofessional Fridays, they said they wanted to talk about a game on the show, but they couldn't talk about it till next week. And they were all like, oh, I can't stop thinking about this game. And Brad was like, yeah, that game. Oh, man. And we'll talk about it next week. And then just before, like, as the VGX was happening, there were three game announcements. This was the third. We might talk about the others in a second. They were like, oh, this isn't the game we were really excited. And the next one came up and was like, oh, is this going to be the awesome game? Oh, you guys, you should really watch this. And it's like, oh, no, this isn't the game we hoped it was announcing. Then finally, when this trailer started, they're like, hey, guys, this is that game. Pay attention to this trailer. So my expectations going to the trailer were really goddamn high, especially since it was those guys really pumping it up. And I can't say that I was expecting to see what I saw. Like, straight up, that game, it's really interesting because it started with procedurally generated everything. Procedurally generated, like life forms, plant life, etc., right? My reaction...
Yeah, which, like we've talked about stuff like that.
Yeah.
Both with, like, the limitations of the polygon and is there a way to improve it. I've often believed that, like, if you procedurally generate something, it, like... You can then fiddle with stuff later, but it has the potential for a much better like world you can craft.
Yeah. And it's so my reaction, like, we've talked about that with Josh Foreman before, right? Like, we've talked about, like, are they looking into procedural generated dungeons and that kind of thing? Like, it is essentially part of what we all dream the future of gaming to be, because if you make something procedurally generated, you can have so much more content in a game because the computer's handling making it. The developers don't have to worry about individually crafting every single thing about the game. Obviously, as you just said, the counterpoint to that is you'll never have a procedurally generated The Last of Us, right?
Yeah.
Because that game has to be crafted, every single element of it from start to finish, and have to be exactly one particular way for it to work. But that isn't to say that The Last of Us is the only kind of game out there. However, my reaction to that trailer when it started was, if you watch it, right, sure, the seed is green, but that's still a shark. Like, clearly what looks like a shark swimming through it. And those were clearly what looked like seaweed on the bottom of the ocean. And when he walked out of the ocean, those were clearly just orange-leaved trees, right? And that was clearly just an X-Wing derivative spacecraft. And what flew over was clearly like an Independence Day derivative set of spacecraft. And when they got into space, they look like a very derivative from your Star Trek kind of spacecraft. And the asteroids look like just normal asteroids. So my reaction was, sure, this is procedurally generated, but looking at what you've shown me, that hasn't necessarily like translated to what we see. It's not actually doing something particularly interesting with that. I don't know. Like, what do you think of? What's your? Do you have any counter perspective on that? Because I found it really kind of off putting that everything would just look kind of normal, but with a different color palette.
I don't mind it because I mean, like, it is an indie game, so it's almost assuredly going to. Well, I'm assuming it's going to be on PC, which means people can start by crafting their own ship designs and all that. So
yeah, that could be really interesting.
I'd like to think it's going to be okay. Like, it's that side doesn't worry me so much as like the greater thing of like, is this actually like how much will be generated per planet, or is it just going to be like, oh, it's a very small world that is the size of like a city or something, and then like you can't generate any more for that planet. I don't know.
Mm. But at the same time, like for example, Githarbleton, if it was say a planet that took an hour to walk all the way across, right? But it was those like very Earth derivative kind of plant life, like fauna and flora. Would you mind that? Like, is that enough for you to want to go out and explore? Like, to me, it sounds like it would kind of diminish my need for exploration. Everything kind of looks the same.
I think it might be more like this is a stable version of it that they don't want to like. They don't want to be like, oh, it just looks like some weird sci-fi sort of thing. Instead, they're making it like, this is the first design of ships. It's very alpha, probably. It's very placeholder-ish.
Oh, yeah, possibly. And you know what? You're kind of right. Like, it would be very interesting to see what the internet's reaction would have been if they'd walked out and there's this like, weird, like, unrecognizable alien landscape above water. And then he walked to the ship. Like, it'd be, I think the fact that they did use Earth as a touchstone, at least in this first trailer, may have been both intentional because they may not want to tip their hands to what else they have working on, but also it allows you to make that small leap of faith into liking it. Because if you pick like a really desolate or like very non-Earth-like landscape, then people could kind of, you're right, like get kind of disinterested with it immediately because it might look too sci-fi for a lot of people. But in this case, they went for something that looked really pretty because those orange trees were really striking in picture, and the fact that it was a green shark swimming through green water made it kind of striking, right? So, yeah, maybe that's the case. Maybe they'll go into more of it. But the other side of your argument is actually something that does deserve discussion. So this is an indie developer working on what is clearly a very, very massive scope game, right? Like, what are your reservations there?
I mean, like Minecraft, I guess, was the same sort of scope, just multiple planets. And I was just one guy. So like the potential for like something like this to happen, it's not impossible. And often like people believe that games like these will either come from some crazy indie developer like the Hello Games or from like Gabe Newell and Valve. Like this isn't going to be a type of game that you see from a AAA developer because the amount of R&D versus the amount of profit they could get out of it isn't worth it.
And it's also like it doesn't fit easily into any currently existing genre. So you would find that like a AAA like developer wouldn't necessarily want to take that chance on creating something new. Whereas that's where you get your indies. That's why indies are so important to this industry, because you get things like Minecraft. You get things like No Man's Sky, right? It is definitely taking a chance with this. But as you said earlier, like, there is an element of where are they getting... Okay, well, what platforms is this going to be on? Because that's actually really important because it determines its limitations, right? And also, where are they getting the funding for this? And that's also really important because if they're not funded enough, then this will never reach the expectations they've made with this one trailer, right? And it's kind of interesting because the Joe Danger guys were almost like... They started as a very Sony-dependent publisher, because they released Joe Danger on PSN, and then Sony helped fund that. Then Sony helped fund the let's face the spreading of that to, I think it was the Joe Danger 2. Then Joe Danger 2, they allowed for being cross-published onto Steam and other places. And then from there, they're going into this. But it's very important that they didn't announce a publisher. They didn't announce a platform for this game. Forbes.com, I'm not sure how reliable they are when it comes to video games, but they indicated that this game is intended for next-generation systems, not just PC. Yeah. That's going to be interesting. Like, because you know that if this was a cross-gen game, then A, an indie developer would struggle of getting onto five platforms, right? But B, when it comes to procedurally generated stuff.
I mean, I think we can say three platforms. I think yeah. if it's they're announcing what 2015.
Yeah, 2015.
I don't think they're planning for it to be on.
Well, actually, no, they haven't said anything about a date. I don't think. I think it's just we're working on it.
But yeah, it's. Yeah. I don't think that it will be something on Xbox 360 or PS3.
I hope it isn't. I really hope it isn't. That sentiment came up a couple times, like when they showed Dying Light. I'm hoping that's not a cross-gen game, because if it's a next-gen game and PC game, then you can have your massive procedure-generated worlds because of the RAM and extra horsepower you can chuck at it, right? And that's really important to the whole thing. But yeah, like so, what do you think the game is going to be, and what would you like it to be? What would you want No Man's Sky to be?
I guess I'd like it to be like just massive open world sandbox in the sense of like not exactly Minecraft, build whatever you want. Maybe there's like set buildings that you can build that have been designed by the developers, the community. I want it to be like MMO in scale of like massive strategy, and we can make these ships and all that, and it's based on each server. But even then, that just seems like too open ended a game to do. So I think it might just have to be something single player only that is just like what was the old? I don't remember what like this old sci fi game is that I could compare it to. Yeah, Freelancer. That's the word.
Yeah.
So I think it might be something like that, but you can actually go on the planet this time. That might be cool.
And this is, I think, the first game where you can start on the ground, point your ship upwards, and just fly to fucking space. Like, I think people have been asking that for a long time, and that's, it's finally happened. That's really, really cool. And you're right. Like, they couldn't make EVE Online like this. Not that developer, and maybe not even any developer at this stage, could make an EVE Online with this kind of base to it. So it'd have to be something small. Like I'm picturing, they've mentioned that like planets you discover will be because everything's procedure generated, but it's set in space once it's generated. So people can discover new planets in this universe, and they've said that planets you discover can cross pollinate into other people's games. So it's gonna be like Spore to that extent, where you find a planet and then suddenly, or like the new game, what was it, the Terraria-esque game,
Starbound.
Starbound. So like Starbound, where you find a thing, it gets generated for you, but then people can, like other people you know, your friends list can now see that new planet and explore it and that kind of stuff. They've also said that the space stuff itself is going to have some multiplayer elements to it. There's going to be fighting each other in space, and that's going to be really interesting. And if you'd ask me, that would be the extent of probably what would be in No Man's Sky 1, this first game. I can't see that. Maybe they'll do a crafting system. Maybe they'll do a colonization system. But I don't think it'll be too much beyond that. Like, it couldn't be your, like, X3 kind of space trading game, but also landing on planets. And if they do somehow make it, like, just straight up X3, but this as well, this whole procedurally generated thing, that would be astounding for an indie developer to be able to do that. But, it's going to be very interesting. Any other closing thoughts about No Man's Sky? I thought it was pretty cool. I don't think it's going to be the next big thing. I'm being very reserved in my judgment, especially because of my previous assertions of not being sure how procedurally generated these planets are. I'm doubtful as to how interesting they can make them. Where do you stand?
I mean, like, I'm interested in it. I'll be watching it attentively, but
yeah.
Game of the year sort of thing, or like just like game of the amazingness. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Jaden was supposed to be really good, but this is asking for a lot. So the other announcements for the night were, let's see, Telltale Games had two announcements. One of them was Tales from Borderlands, which is a Telltale Games game, hot collab joint with Gearbox Software in a Telltale game based in the Borderlands universe. What are your thoughts?
I knew that was coming.
Did you? Really? I thought it was a fucking huge surprise.
No, because I can't remember. Somewhere it had been like teased that they would be doing something like that. So I was like, okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Like it's way back in the day, they picked up three titles, and the first, like, it was Walking Dead and The Wolf Among Us. And then it makes perfect sense for them to pick up something like this.
Right. Yeah, I guess so. It's just, I wonder how many games they can do concurrently, because they're doing Walking Dead and Wolf Among Us at the moment. Then they announced this, and they announced, A Song of Ice and Fire. Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones, Telltale's game. That makes it four potentially concurrent games, and I don't know how they'll do that. Like, I don't know if that'll work out for them. But no, when it comes to just specifically the Borderlands one, I don't know how I feel, because do you think there's room for an interesting game, like an interesting story-based, like decision-makes game based in that universe?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah? I don't know. I can't see like a real.
It can't follow the rich lore that is
the Vault Hunters.
Handsome Jack talking about dick ponies or something. But yeah, it could be cool. Oh, that's not good. Yeah, I died.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was just playing Spelunky while we're recording.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's the whole Vault Hunter fiction doesn't seem like something I'm particularly interested in when it comes to talkie game.
It's more, I've seen like what people, like what indie, not even indie, but just like filmmakers have done with that style of artwork. And I think Telltale can make something cool out of that. Or the thing is, do they want to make something silly? Do they want to bring back the time of like Monkey Island and then just like weird like shenanigans? Either of those are a possibility.
Yeah.
Like I think. They've done enough serious games, they could probably do a silly game again.
And speaking of serious games, oh man, that Game of Thrones game, maybe
Game of Thrones.
That's
I think you mean the Game of Thrones perfect. Game.
That's fucking perfect, man. That's fucking
Game of Thrones game.
That's I can't think of a better developer with a property. Telltale.
Jeff Keighley couldn't have said that better himself.
Yeah.
I think he did.
Yeah. There you go. And it's just perfect. And I'm not a huge fan of George R. R. Martin's work, because I don't think that guy's ever going to get around to fucking finishing it. And like fan reviews of his books have just been going downhill. But
I guess the question is like, is there a good way to end it, or is there a way to end it? Because like, it'd have to be, like, everybody but one character dies, and that's the end.
Yeah, right? You know, like, but Jon Snow. Like, Jon Snow's, like, the only one people care about left alive, at least as far as I'm concerned. And, yeah, it's going to be very interesting seeing how everything goes down. But this game is called Game of Thrones, like, specifically. It's not A Song of Ice and Fire. So it's probably going to be set in the first book, if I was to guess, right? And that could be... Maybe you're playing some side characters or just like something that's happening behind the scenes. Or even if you're just straight up playing the narrative of the book, that could be very, very interesting. And I would much like to play. Like, is that something you'd be interesting though? Have you read the books?
No, I've not read the books, or do I own HBO? Like, I'll probably not be that interested in this. Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to get through The Wolf Among Us, and that I'm just trying to watch it or experience it with my roommate.
Yeah. And that seemed really cool. So I definitely think Telltale has the chops to make something interesting with an IP, an established IP. They've proved it over and over again.
I kind of think this announcement, when they talked about it on the VGX, was actually when Joel McHale was most interactive with developers, and that was something he had seen.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I guess you know what? I guess this actually does kind of hit that The Walking Dead spot, where it's something that's so like big in pop culture that it could be very successful for Telltale as a company. like, especially since it's such a good pairing. So many people love Game of Thrones that this could be very big for them. It could be a very big game coming forward. But yeah, so those are the big announcements from the VGX. The VGX itself was a piece of shit. There are other, obviously a couple of others, like New Mechs and Titanfall and all that kind of stuff, but I don't really particularly care about those.
Okay, I just want to point out for Titanfall that the, the one they announced after the concert looks like basically the entire mechanic is highly suspicious of that of, like, Hawken. It's like, hey, you get a boost mechanic that lets you sprint around stuff.
Yeah, and but also it's, I don't know if it's because they made the medic mech, whatever it is, like the big tanky one, seems so cool, but they made this one seem like the bad one.
The ogre?
Yeah, it's like there's the assault, there's the ogre, and there's the bad one. That's what this one felt like. Because the entire video was it running around and then just kind of dying against the other mechs. It was kind of funny. At the end of the video, he turns around the corner and then he sees another mech and the assault class mech, and that one just turns around and the screen goes black. Like, I don't know.
It looks a lot like that might be the one that is the Call of Duty one that is just like, I'm going to run around knifing people in a giant mech with a knife.
It does have a sword, right? It has a fucking sword. Mechs. Oh, well. One thing I have to say about Titanfall is I wish that game had a single player, because then I would actually play it, but I don't at the moment.
Well, no, like it's like what Vince Zampelli was saying is, like, there's people who only play the straight up deathmatch, and there's people who only play the story mode version, and I think those story mode versions are going to be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Just like the idea of adding an AI to act as the person who gets, like, we can all gang up and target. People might be bad at the shooters, but they're still going to be happy just being able to shoot AI and get some points.
I guess so. Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. I don't know. It's going to be very interesting to see if that game works out well for people like me who like story and stuff. Because the universe is really interesting. Like, the whole, like, they have this robotics company that's making all these mechs and they're doing the ads, and it seems really interesting. But
I mean, when it comes to interesting stories, I think the Hawken might be more interesting, but and that is a free-to-play game with lousy story, so
there you go.
I guess we'll just have to wait and find out.
Indeed. So that was the VGX. You can catch it on their Twitch. I've forgotten. I think it's on the Game Trailers Twitch. Then you can watch the archive there. Please don't. Please just don't. Just leave it alone. It's not worth watching for anyone. But that wasn't the only news this week. There was actually a massive, potentially massive piece of news that also came out this week. Before I get there, I'm just going to just quickly scan the Giant Bomb news page to see if there's anything else. But people may remember that a couple months ago, maybe even less than that, Adam Sessler was kind of losing his shit on Twitter about some apparently really big news that hit him that could change his career. Saying that, can you guess what the news was, Doubleton?
I'm guessing, having that bit of tidbit, I'm sure it has to do with YouTube monetization.
Yes. So the big news that hit this week, or at least the big news that is verified by multiple sources but remains a rumor that hit this week, is the is what he was freaking out about. Essentially, YouTube is finally going to crack down. I say finally because I'm not sure where I sit on this matter. On the monetization of game videos. So, specifically, Let's Plays and other types of commentated game videos, but in addition to that, also trailers and just in general non-sanctioned, like, pieces of cutscenes, etc., on YouTube from games. YouTube is finally going to start cracking down on the monetization of them and just across the board. So, essentially, what's happening is, from 2014 onwards, or potentially the start of 2014, or near the start of 2014, they're gonna disallow people from monetizing videos based upon video games from which the company hasn't allowed monetization. They're gonna do it by actually checking all their affiliates' videos between every 2 to 48 hours. There's gonna be random checks going out to videos, making sure that it isn't a video game that is also set to be monetized. And of course, like indie developer, it sounds like it's going to be based off agreements with publishers as to which games will be limited. And so obviously you'll still have all your videos about indie games. You'll still have your videos about smaller publishers don't give a fuck. Like, for example, Atlus, I don't think really gives a fuck.
Well, like Nintendo, for example.
Yeah. Oh, do you want to go through this news article? Or I can link it to you if you have it.
Well, no, I mean, like, I just know a couple months ago, Nintendo was like, hey, you can't monetize. Like, we want to get all the money that you be making off these videos.
Yeah.
Promoting our games.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, yeah, that's a very interesting way of putting it, because so the idea is Let's Players and other YouTube places have grown a pretty much a grassroots business around taking wholesale video game footage, whether it be entire playthroughs of games like Let's Plays or like what it is, for example, or what the fuck is Turtle Biscuit's version of it, where he's pretty much quick looks, right? They're pretty much doing quick looks and Let's Plays.
Which I guess Giant Bomb should also be worried about, because is this going to be like impeding their like quick looks and all that? Which,
right. Exactly. Yeah. So the idea is all those guys, they get money by posting that like, legitimately good content. Like it's very watchable to a large extent, and it's in many cases very well produced content surrounding this footage directly captured from what is essentially other people's work. So if you think about it, like, for example, let's just take the biggest example. I keep saying example, whatever. I'm tired. PewDiePie is someone who's famous for doing Let's Plays. And I remember talking about it on this podcast when it came out, but The Last of Us, right? So The Last of Us is a game made by Naughty Dog, published by Sony. It is a game which is playable on the PlayStation 3, which in itself isn't made to allow you to capture footage from it. People have circumvented that by using a loophole in the component output for the PS3, which is obviously unencrypted, so they can capture that, or just straight up hacking the HTTP encryption of the HDMI output. So people have essentially cracked the PS3 or found loopholes in the PS3 to be able to post footage from a game made by Sony and Naughty Dog onto the internet with their own commentary over it. So PewDiePie's Let's Play, right? That is the legal definition of what they did. So they are essentially stealing, inverted commas, this footage from a game that from these developers, right? And it's hard to say because games obviously have that element of interactability. So his playthrough of the game will be entirely different than my playthrough of the game. It's because you have the element of interaction that the argument thus far has been you are producing content because you're interacting with the game, so therefore you're making your own content with this game. And you're also adding voiceover and camera to it, like a facial cam to it. So you're also acting on top of that. So their argument has been they are producing content based off this game, right?
I guess the two big questions that arise from this debate is, are you viewing this as the viewer of the video to which the ad revenue is being paid to try and advertise for?
Yeah.
Because like that's us watching it sort of thing.
You watch it.
Are we watching it to watch the video game or to watch the YouTuber with their comedic performance or their interpretation or their review of the game?
Yeah.
Like who are we going there to see? And then if that stuff was not readily made available, would we in turn buy the game to sort of view it ourselves, or would we not buy it having not seen a good review of it?
Exactly. Like it's an incredibly interesting gray area in modern gaming press. And this has come up in the news a couple of times, but I guess it's coming to a head now. So that's why I thought we'd discuss it on the show today.
I think that the horror games are a great example of this with like people who wouldn't normally enjoy watching those games, but who play it, still buy it. And that's a very slim margin because they watch other people who either like freak out or just like do comedic performances of games.
Right. And it's very important to say that it's specifically the monetization of these videos that's being cracked down upon. So, and it's kind of interesting because it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because people like, for example, your Jesse Coxes, your Turtle Biscuits, make money off these videos, and that's how they keep doing the videos. If you take away the monetization, you take away their
incentive
livings. Yeah, their incentives for making them in the first place. So there is an argument for, well, there's still going to be Let's Play videos of many of these games. They just can't be monetized anymore.
Which I actually think is kind of interesting that this is happening, as well as like that we're on the cusp of, like, this past year, especially more than other years, a lot of companies had been ignoring the reviewers and just going straight to the YouTubers, because they're seeing these massive view counts of PewDiePie and whatnot, and they're saying, "Hey, can you advertise our game? Can you get some can we get some PR out there?" Almost to the extent of, I know for some Let's Players, the guys at the Stanley Parable did some special versions of the game just for them.
Yeah,
like they made a few cuts of the audio, so it's. We're seeing on one side of like the industry, there's people who are like, they're interested in this. But then on the other side, often the AAAs, I'm sure, are like trying to hammer down. And it's hard to get both sides happy.
Yeah.
And we're going to end up burning one side more than the other, I'm sure, depending on how this plays out.
Right. So some of these companies, through various sources, there's a list being compiled of what their stance is on footage of their games being put out. So think of this as what could potentially be lost from YouTube next year. Okay, so Activision. So Activision does not want to allow derivative works from their games. By derivative works, legal term that means essentially anything that's based off footage from their game is essentially considered derivative work because you're taking their footage. Activision doesn't want any derivative footage off their game, derivative works from their game at all on YouTube to be at all. Just full stop. They don't care about monetization. They just don't want that footage on YouTube. Right?
The hilarious bug where the guy like climbs onto a dock and then turns around and there's a giant hole where the ocean was and just people start flying into the sky and the ship slowly rises up from the depths and then just docks.
Uh-huh.
You won't see that anymore.
Yeah.
Because they don't want you to see bugs.
Exactly. Bungie. So Bungie specifically says they don't want you to create derivative works from their software in their terms at all. So you will never see, like, for example, the Giant Bomb Extra Life Halo streams could potentially not be legal to
more
be archived
so on more so than that, like internet, like I guess sensations, or I guess, like industry,
yeah,
the company Rooster Teeth that came out of Bungie videos,
Red versus Blue,
won't
man.
Exist anymore.
Yeah,
like the potential for stuff like that won't happen.
Yes. Okay. So, but some companies aren't so bad. So Capcom says you can do whatever you want as long as you aren't making any money from it. There's no monetization allowed in the videos. You can post whatever you want. You can't monetize it. It's kind of an interesting place to be. Codemasters, they don't want you to monetize the videos. Gung Ho Online, don't know who they are. Oh, the Ragnarok, right? Videos okay. Monetization is not okay. Microsoft. This is interesting as well. Videos are completely fine as long as you're not paid. So because Bungie is obviously the Halo games were Microsoft published games, it could be potentially okay for Halo games to continue to be on YouTube as long as they're unmonetized.
But you can't make money off it.
You can't make money off it. Let's see. Let's look for big people. Naughty Dog. They don't want anything on YouTube. And it's kind of interesting because, for example, The Last of Us, it is a very story-driven game. I can see why they don't want cutscenes, etc., on YouTube, but they just don't want anything on YouTube. They don't care about monetization.
I almost wonder if there might be a slight backlash on some of this, where
there will be.
Well, yes, but if they're going to change it to like no monetization for the first like month,
yeah, let's talk about that in a second. Yeah, we'll talk about it in a second because I think there's some
keep
companies doing it right. Yeah. So Nintendo encourages videos, especially Let's Plays, and you can monetize your video. There are obviously some cases.
Nintendo wants to share.
Exactly. There's some cases where Nintendo also wants to share, which is one potential response. Rockstar and Take-Two Interactive encourage videos unless they are just straight cutscene footage. So, for example, if you have a Let's Play and there's cutscenes in there, that's fine. But if you're just posting the cutscene, that's not fine. And they don't want things monetized, which is more restrictive than, say, your Capcom's, but not as restrictive as Naughty Dog. It's kind of interesting. And some others, like I believe Square Enix doesn't want any permission. Like, you'll find that many of the major game developers who make the best games out there don't want monetization. Like, Telltale Games don't want you to monetize their videos. But in many cases, just don't want any videos from their game on YouTube at all. That could really change. Well, the future of gaming. It's just straight up, let's not talk about any, like, mince any words here. This could be the future of the popularization and just democratization of gaming footage, gaming press, and people experiencing games, right? So yeah, like as you're saying, Thurbleton, where do you think is the what do you think is the line here? Do you think this is justified from the publisher's perspective?
I don't know if it's justified as much as like they've been like they make this content and they see that it's sort of like it's a visual piracy sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I almost wonder if this is them just like drawing a line in the sand, like just making a statement and hoping to sort of hoping that it's going to like start some sort of conversation amongst the YouTube community, and because there's so many different facets that are going to be affected by this. Like people who like just there's people who let's play professionally, like that is their livelihood.
PewDiePie,
as well
up.
As
that is his livelihood.
Yeah, but then like it's just rolling off the list of a couple like Gassy Mexican, Eat My Addiction, CNanners, Markiplier,
Two Best Friends Play. I think Two Best Friends, whatever it was.
But then also there's the reviewing side of it, which will also get doubly affected. And I've seen like we've seen bits of like fights happening where. Either it was under the Creative like Commons license to do some of these videos, and they've been taken down, like from Total Biscuit or from Angry Joe or like some of those reviewers. And I wonder if they're just saying like, okay, this is the stance that's going to be unless we have some discussion.
Yeah, and you can.
But
very
I don't think that I don't think the companies want this discussion to happen. I think they tried, but now they're just like, screw it.
Yeah, because it's kind of difficult. So imagine this list is of, like, say, 20 or so developers, right? That is 20 individual companies owned through, like insurance companies and other, like, just investment companies.
Like
that's
more like the big publishers, I think, are the ones that are like don't want this to happen, which do have the money and move around to make YouTube. They have the lawyers to make YouTube do this.
They have a lot of money. But they're also owned by entirely disparate and different groups of people around the world. Imagine being a YouTuber trying to argue against all these different companies, right, as to your perspective on it. Because the other side of things, the company side of things is, like, movies can't be posted to YouTube. Even if it's just commentary track, you can't post a movie to YouTube. You're not even supposed to post music to YouTube, even though obviously that's kind of gotten away with itself. You can't post music videos. As part of your video to YouTube, you're not allowed to anyway. That's supposed to be DMCA, like it's taken down, etc. But people have been doing it with games. So from their perspective, you're literally taking their work and showing it for free to potentially millions of people. Like PewDiePie videos, some of them have over 1 million views. It's not a small segment of the potential gaming audience out there. That's their perspective.
Yeah.
From the other side of things, like Thurbleton, you may be able to verse some of me because
it's the issue is that from those million views, let's just make an assumption that like of 80,000 are just like people wanting to watch PewDiePie, like or it's just like they're bored and they're just watching a video on YouTube. 20,000 might be people that are like not like just watching this and wanting to not pay the game, and maybe like 10,000 are. Or like not to the numbers are off, but like then 100,000 are like people who are watching it and are considering buying the game, and then like of that, and this is a multiple Venn diagram. Then like people who just would never want to buy that game,
right? Exactly.
And
it's like
knowing
a free play game.
What is an advertisement and what is people trying to make money like? What are people advertising the game and what are people trying to just make money off the game? And they're one and the same in a lot of cases. Like a lot of the cases, it's going to be. If you stamp out the people trying to make a living, you're going to lose out on a lot of advertisements and it's going to hurt the gaming industry. This is also hurting the gaming industry, but is it hurting the gaming community?
And I think it does to a large extent. And from the, just in terms of the creative
perspective, what does? What's happening right now or what is being affected?
I think that the ability for these people to make money by playing games and therefore have things like Polaris, for example, to be able to have that, Polaris has such a massive reach into the YouTube community that not only are more and more people being drawn to them and thus being drawn to the hardcore side of games, and we all know that hardcore people buy 10 times as many games just in terms of pure money output than the casuals do, So it's growing the hardcore audience. But beyond that, it's inviting things like the Polaris podcast. Let's just not talk about its quality because that's obviously variable, but and this one is too. Let's just not, we're not better than
the fact that like they might do a trailer like talking about a game and advertising that it's coming out.
Yeah.
And then because that was a trailer, like that 3-minute clip in a 3-hour podcast, they can take the whole thing down.
They can take the whole thing down. But in terms of what the podcast is itself, the podcast is like their podcast is, irrespective of quality, it is legitimate discussion about games as a medium. It's talking about video games. It's talking about its recommendations for video games. It's introducing people to video games they maybe never heard of. It's growing the it's important for the industry for things like that to exist. Podcasts, for example, if you took podcasts away from the video game industry, the video game industry would maybe to a large extent collapse itself. The hardcore side of it would to a large extent collapse.
It would definitely stagger greatly.
Yeah, because that discussion is a huge part of why things are big. Like why things are growing so much, why people still care. It's why, for example, Persona 5 is probably going to sell 3 times as much as Persona 4 did in its first couple of months, because so many more people would have heard of it by then. It's why sequels sell more than their first version of games. Why Modern Warfare 2 will sell more than Modern Warfare 1. Like that happens because of discussion. This is because of people talking about games, having videos about games on YouTube, it like infiltrating so many parts of the media. That is potentially affected by this, right? But it's weird because on a basic sense, the publishers are in the right, at least from my perspective, right? Like it's scary because affecting monetization is, to a large extent, it's part and parcel with how the laws are for any other medium. You can't post a movie with you over it and monetize it, ever. But
you are absolutely correct in that, sir. However, with the thing of like Valve, how they fight piracy, they don't try and stamp out piracy. Like if you want to view this as, like I said, visual piracy, you don't try and stamp it out because people will just either not bother trying to do it because they can't make money off of it and thus lose out on that potential of advertisement for the game, or they'll just go to another way. Like they'll do Twitch or they'll do it's Vimeo, or they'll do Vimeo. Like Uplay. Like yes. This will not stop people from trying to make a buck off it. Mm-hmm. What they should try and do is try and find a way to like either some sort of symbiotic thing where both people make some money off of it. Like maybe the game takes like a 10% cut of advertisement revenue or I don't know. Like it's people start fighting over it. But
exactly right. Cause let's,
like Valve doesn't try and stamp out piracy. They try and make a better service to do that. And
yeah,
I think the games industry should try and figure something out too. And it won't be the games industry. It has to be YouTube that figures it out.
Well, yeah, it'll be a discussion between YouTube and the publishers. And the weird thing is because it probably won't be just that. Because what YouTube does in general, because YouTube is much bigger than any of these guys, right? It's Google. Google is much bigger than any of these players. So what they're going to do in the outset is YouTube is going to immediately enforce what the publishers want because they're in the right in terms of the law. So the first thing that's going to happen, and it's probably going to happen because of this news, is in 2014 or so, whenever this comes into effect, suddenly a lot of people on the internet are going to lose their livelihoods because YouTube doesn't give a fuck about you, the people who are posting content. They give a fuck about them being potentially sued by these publishers from hosting this content,
which isn't theirs. The lowest of the totem pole is the viewer, followed by the person making the videos.
Yeah, the creator, and then it's the owner of the actual content. So it's like big corporations. So it's viewer, creator, big corporations, and then Google's the top. They oversee, but being in the top, like any king, they have to worry about the subject that they're going to have to bow to the big publishers and big companies, the big corporations. So the first thing is going to happen is all these videos are going to disappear from YouTube, and that's going to be really bad. And
not all of them, because like we'll still be seeing a lot of indies, we'll still be seeing a lot of like the lower end, but the higher end, it's gone.
It's gone. Right. And so what's immediately going to happen from that is going to be what was that stupid that law that was going to be that was trying to be passed in
SOPA.
The US. SOPA. It's going to be in, I think, if I was to predict the future, it's going to be something
like that,
very similar to SOPA happening about this. And it's kind of weird because unlike like senators or whatever it was that people were appealing to, where you can actually write to specific people who make decisions, it's going to be the viewers and the viewing public versus corporations. And corporations don't have to worry about a voting public. There's been countless times of, for example, boycotts for Modern Warfare PC version. Like, that didn't work out very well because people still bought the fucking game. Like, corporations are used to getting their way. So it's going to be very interesting seeing the viewing public versus them trying to get more rights. Because in the end, you the viewer in the publisher's eye are already a pirate. You're essentially committing piracy, and by fighting against this, you're going to be fighting for what is essentially in their eyes piracy. You're going to want people. You're asking to view their content for free. That's what you're doing by standing up against it. It's going to be very interesting to see how this develops going forward. And I think the only way that it might come into effect is if they actually see that these YouTubers and so on speaking out against them as publishers will affect their sales. Because that is the only way to really speak to these people, is by not buying their games. And that is going to be very interesting. Like, how do you think it's going to play out, Doubleton? That's how I see it. I see people crying out and maybe affecting sales, maybe not, and that deciding the future. Where do you think it's going to go?
I think it's going to be like some of the bigger publishers are going to probably take a stand and be like, you know, no, or it will be much harsher for, like, there will probably be some giving in from various game companies, and they'll probably adjust the rules to be more lenient. But when it comes to
like your Rockstars, like, and your Naughty Dogs.
Well, no, it's going to be like, I think nanny state's probably the wrong word for it, but it's just like, if there's ever a video that they don't approve, like they disapprove of, it will be taken down. And so we'll never be able to, like, if there's a review that's a negative review, we'll never hear the downside of it. And so it's like reviewers or people who like do Let's Plays and they don't like the content being produced, they'll just get stamped out.
That would be a terrifying future.
It's going to be this weird, like, 1984,
yeah,
I think that's the right, sort of, like, yes, sort of world, and it's going to be like,
it's going to be very, and people won't stand for that. Like, that's, because another eventuality is, this is just YouTube. I know YouTube is probably the biggest video delivery service in the world, but it is still just YouTube. Do you think there's a possibility for these YouTubers to actually launch a campaign to move to another service? And do you think people will follow them?
I think if another service is there that's willing to pick them up, that, like, they'll definitely transfer to that. Like, if maybe Vimeo
the
or
rise
something,
of Vimeo.
It's with Twitter, it's easy to transfer. Like, they can just say, like, hey, check out my new videos here instead. I've already transferred it, sort of thing. Or maybe they're all going back to Facebook. I don't know, but yeah, like, there's. They can't stamp it out. They can try, but it's not going to work. People will just watch videos somewhere else.
Yeah. And then finally, there's the glorious future where people actually find a way around it. Like, so there's actually like
the alternative is if, like, YouTube does something that Twitch has been doing with subscribers. Like, it's sort of like the giant bomb approach of, like, hey, we're making this content. We don't make money off the ad revenue. We make money off of our, like, personality. So if you subscribe to us, if you, like, support us, that might be a thing. Mm-hmm. Something that, like, the Hank brothers, the guys who do VidCon, they have something called Subbable, and a lot of other, like, YouTubers have picked up on this as well. But it's that idea of subscribing to somebody and paying, like, a monthly fee of whatever amount and helping out.
Yeah.
Instead of ad revenue.
Yeah, and I think that's one potential feature. Another potential feature is revenue share. So we've touched on this in terms of Nintendo. What do you think is the likeliness, or will there be any likeliness of there being potentially a revenue share between these publishers and these Let's Players? Like, for me personally, I think Let's Plays for a new game are dirty. But at the same time, I will always remember that my single favorite game of all time is Persona 4 Golden, and I only ever played Persona 4 because of Giant Bomb's Endurance Run. And that is a Let's Play. There's no way around it. That is essentially a Let's Play, right? And, of course, that But the thing is with the Endurance Run is it started months, or maybe I think it was a year or so after Persona 4 had come out. And Giant Bomb's always been very serious about that specific thing, whereas they do not want to ever post videos, like full-length videos, like Let's Plays, Endurance Runs, for new games, because they don't feel it's a very... They think it's grimy, and I do too, right? But at the same time, they still do it. So there's two other ways that this could work out. One is obviously let's talk about the first one first, a revenue share. And in my eyes, that completely like overrides any form of bad feelings I have about it. If there's a revenue share, I'm perfectly happy with PewDiePie making millions of dollars over YouTube, or potentially half the money he previously made over YouTube, or $500,000 a year, whatever it does. Because the publishers, or at least the developers, maybe mainly the publishers, will be getting money for what they did. What do you think?
I think it's going to be I think that is a possibility, but it greatly depends on how greedy the people with the power are when it comes to like allowing people to make videos like it.
Yeah.
Because like maybe it's like after 1,000 videos you'll get like 5%. Which means like maybe a couple dollars.
Oh, man, that would be fucked.
Like right now, it's kind of tough for people to make a living off of it, especially fighting things like Adblock.
Right. Right.
And then when more people start digging into that, taking a piece of the pie, it's going to be tougher and tougher for people to make livelihoods off of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it will be something that will be almost like public radio. They're going to people who want to make a living off this will have to make deals with all different sorts of people. Like it's like looking for a few people to make subscriptions, making some ad sharing and trying to shake multiple hands, I think is going to be the good to probable outcome.
Mm-hmm.
The bad outcome is just, it just all stops and game community dies.
Yeah. Which to be fair, isn't going to happen. Like, one way or another, the community will find a way around it. Because the beautiful thing about the gaming community is that we're all generally intelligent people. So you'll have things like people moving to Vimeo, people moving to Twitch. I know.
I listen to people playing Call of Duty, and they don't sound that intelligent.
Yeah, let me have my rose-colored glasses when it comes to my fellow gamers. I don't know. God, VGX was so bad. But you'll have people moving to the Twitch model of things, or the Subbable model of things, and that could very much work for them. But in my eyes, a shared revenue future is a very good version of the future. The other version...
I mean, like it could just be they're all going to switch to Twitch, and it's all going to be Twitch highlights.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. That'd be cool. Because I'm willing to pay for, like I do with Giant Bomb, I'm willing to pay for the guys I actually like.
It's cool on one side, but on the other side, it's also trying to find the right words for it. But it's dodging the issue, and that just means a couple years down the line, it's going to end up on Twitch as well.
Oh yeah,
and they're going to want to start blocking out those Twitch streams, which I know some people Twitch has made it so you can't stream anything under that game name for a couple days on its release, I believe.
Yeah, and that is again that straight up. I segue to the second version of the future, the second good version of the future, which is the Giant Bomb model of only producing Let's Plays after, say, a year or 6 months after a game has been released. So you still have that release hype. You still have the massive amount of people who buy the game day one. That's the only way you can see that content.
To an extent, the game companies don't care because Nintendo has, no, it was Sega that outlawed... Like they took down videos from games Sega had made from 10 years ago.
Yeah,
in this big bum rush, and it's like if a big publisher cares enough about it, they will make whatever case they want to about taking the money, even if it is subscriber generation model of hey, they're getting it for a personality, not for the games you make, and then well, you made this one video of ours out of the 200 you made, we want 50% of your profit. And we're going to sue you for it. And I envision that might be a possibility because I've worked with lawyers and they're dicks.
They're assholes. But do you think there's a possible future for everything to be fine and dandy as long as you publish a video 6 months after a game's released? Because that's what I hope is going to happen, but it's probably not.
Sure, having played Bioshock Infinite, there's infinite possibilities.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, in terms of likeliness, let's just round out this topic in terms of what we think is going to happen. Where do you think this is going to go? How do you think this is going to go down?
I think it's going to be initially they're going to stamp out a lot of people, and there's the community might a lot of people will probably not be able to stay afloat. I think there's going to be a fair few that like they mainly work off like the PC game market, that like the exclusive PC game market that is much more okay with stuff like this. Mm-hmm. Like the Valve games or the Minecraft Let's Players or stuff like that, where it's like, yeah, whatever, you're advertising the game, go for it.
Yeah.
And they'll stay afloat, and there's going to be some backlash to it, and maybe some stuff might get changed around in terms of rules. But I think it's going to be people are going to go to another, like either a lot more activity on Twitch and a lot more like highlight streams, and like maybe Twitch might make it so that you can change your homepage to be much more YouTube like right now, of just like, here's all the list, all the videos of my highlights, check it out.
Yeah. If I was Twitch, I would do that. I would start making those moves. Well, it's almost too late. It's already December 9th, right? Or 8th. But I would start moving that direction as quickly as possible, just to be able to get that YouTube crowd, because that is where a lot of the gaming is going.
I think my worry is for guys like Giant Bomb, because granted, they're in the industry, they know a lot of the companies, but when it comes to like the law, it's hard to make edge cases of like, oh, we're going to punish these guys, but not punish these guys in a public sense. Like they get away with that on some things, but like stuff like trademarks, you can't enforce selectively. You have to enforce all across the board.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure how IPs are going to handle. But yeah,
it's going to be interesting, because for Giant Bomb's case, them specifically, I don't think they'll have too much of a problem with it, because...
Well, I mean, like with stuff like Quick Looks or WTF is, like that is one of their main things. And if they can't post that on YouTube, then...
Well,
curious how many people are going to be going to find out about it.
Well, let's have a look. So Giant Bomb videos on YouTube, because from my memory, they don't get... They generally get around 30,000 views on YouTube for their videos. Giant Bomb is a much bigger site than that. So they have their own player on the website, and I don't know, because I never log out anymore, how much of that directs towards YouTube. But I would imagine that more than 30,000 people watch a video on Giant Bomb. And there's definitely the 10 to 20,000 subscribers as well. So Giant Bomb itself, they have their own website, and it's ad-supported in and of itself. So it has ads on it. So that's where they're getting a lot of their revenue. They also have the subscriber base, so they're getting a lot of revenue from there. 30,000 views on YouTube doesn't translate to a lot of revenue. And I'm not even sure if these videos are monetized, because I have Adblock. So I don't think people like GameSpot or Giant Bomb will be too poorly affected. But you'll definitely have people like Polaris and Revision 3 specifically. Like Revision 3 is going to have a lot of issues going forward. That's why Sessler specifically, we opened the segment talking about Adam Sessler. He does really good work, but he does all his work on YouTube. So Rev3 Games is going to be very interesting to watch going forward, because they have the power of Revision 3 behind us, and maybe they'll be able to sort out some form of agreement with publishers to be able to post the videos that they do. But it's going to be really tough for them potentially going forward. So in terms of like what I think is going to happen, I really do see a future where the first thing that happens is all these guys get shut down, and
like,
then
I have to wonder if it's going to be this surprise thing from the games industry of like when they say, all right, flip the switch, let's shut all this stuff down. Then they start, like, they get calls from like the internet community of what they see as pirates.
Yeah.
But they also see stuff like Sessler or even like Total Biscuit and the PewDiePie, like, oh, we've been, our PR side has been using you for advertisement. And then PR comes to the legal department and say, why'd you shut this guy down? We just paid him $10,000 to make this video. I hope that happens. I hope to be a fly on the wall when that happens, but I
wish we could be.
I get kind of pessimistic when it comes to stuff like this, and like, no, it's going to be the worst case scenario.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it is going to be the worst case scenario, and it's going to be,
call me cynical Thurp, man.
Like, hey, cynical Thurp. Because indie games, or it's interesting, because indie games will just be freewheeling. Like, you'll still see Let's Plays monetize Let's Plays of indie games, no problems. And that's fine, because that's, especially into the indie community, that's
double down on the people. Minecraft and Starbound.
Yeah. And your home, Gone Homes, etc. Like, the advertising you get from Let's Play on their side is way more interesting, because not only is that exposing the game to way more people than they would be with an indie game budget and marketing, which is zero, but you're also getting a way lower entry price, so you're far more likely to have someone watching a Let's Play of, say, Gone Home, and then buying Gone Home, because it's only like $5 on Steam sale, right? So it's like, I think for them, it's going to be really interesting. It's going to be fine, or potentially even a boom in how many people cover indie games, because it's going to be free monetization or free from all these restrictions on that community. But yeah, it's going to be like Jesse Cox is currently doing a Rise playthrough, and I love it because I don't have an Xbox One, but I'm part of the problem because I don't have an Xbox One. I have no intention of buying Rise, but I'm experiencing Rise thanks to Jesse Cox, right? So it's, I feel bad doing it, and I know that it's not exactly the right thing to do. So it's, when it's shut down, it's really bad for Jesse Cox, because this is how he makes money, and I like that guy. But at the same time, it's okay for them to shut down. It's not okay, but it's the right thing, and I don't know. So that's where I stand. I'm dazed and confused.
You feel it's not okay to shut them down, but it's also not okay for them to
do what they're doing.
Keep doing what they're doing, which I agree. Like, it is harmful to both sides, but I just don't believe that there is, like, unless there's some rule from YouTube sort of thing of saying, like, here's the middle ground we've decided that you can walk between. Like, you can make, you can make ad revenue deals anywhere from 40 to 60%. You can start making subscriber models and all that. I don't know.
I don't know. It is important to
say
that even though it is confirmed by multiple sources, it is still a rumor. So let's see how this goes. But yes, and with that, thank you, Therapleton. That is the show for this week.
You love using that line.
Yeah. It's similar to Top Gear. I've forgotten what they use, but something like that. Anyway.
Yeah.
And with that bombshell.
I think Top Gear's line is in the world.
In the world.
The fastest car in the world.
In the world. And with that bombshell, thank you for listening to the Scotchcast this week. Doubleton, there's only two of us. Do you have a plug?
GiantBomb.com. It's a website about video games. They're going to be starting doing their game of the year. I've been trying to talk to the various hosts of both the Licking / Scotchcast, as well as maybe getting some of the other community podcasts to have similar discussions, but just on the Giant Bomb video of the year.
Yeah,
year, but
I know what my nominations are, and I already know what's going to win best subscriber video, because it's predetermined. It's been set in stone already.
I think there might be some walking backwards on what the winner might be. But...
well said, sir. But yeah, look forward to that. There's going to be game of the discussions on this side of things, probably next week, maybe the week after, but definitely before end of December.
We'll probably do it as Giant Bomb starts releasing their game of the year videos. We'll be like, oh yeah, we need to do that.
Yeah, we need to do that. And so it's going to be us talking about best video of the year, that kind of stuff. Just look forward to that on our end. That'll be my plug as well. There's nothing really else in there. There's some books I've been reading, but I don't think any of them have been worth plugging. So,
also, thanks to you guys for listening to us usually every week for just, we don't get any ad revenue off this. They're doing it for free.
Doing it for free. Exactly. And hey, man, our Hattable Boyfriend Let's Play doesn't have any monetization. There you go. I'm already setting the trends for the future, right? Right?
Yeah, totally. Can we end this, please?
Thanks for listening, and goodbye.